Hey guys, would you get the door on your way in, please? Bring your shed, I appreciate it. Thank you. No, you can't. So good morning, everybody. I'll let you finish up your breakfast. We'll get this thing started pretty much on time. Today we have a good schedule lined up today. And who better to start a day than Brett Martin? Who all knows who Brett Martin?
Hey.
He has a little following here.
No, you don't have to raise your hand.
Okay. All right. But anyway, we had a great day yesterday. I thought we did in response to all that's going on around us. And we stayed true to the education for NCHA healthcare members, full and associate. We had a great education program yesterday. I remind us the reason why we're here. You know, as I started off speaking yesterday and started getting choked up, we're here to support patients, to support those that can't support themselves, either through the environment, through the way we maintain our air handlers, the way we build our buildings, and those type of things. We're here to support those that can't support themselves. That's what we're tasked to do in our jobs. And I think right now the best thing we can do during all this drama that's going on is just do our jobs and be very professional and smart about it. A couple things. We got three programs today. We're going to kick it off with Brett Martin. Again, what a great way to start the day is with Brett Martin. So, Brett, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Dion. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for hanging out and having some kind of a presentation today. I was wondering on the drive down here whether I'd have 10 people in the audience with all that's going on. As some of you probably know, I used to work with Atrium as their director of fire life safety utilities. I left Atrium a couple years ago, and I'm back in the industry that I started in right out of college, and that's the insurance industry. And I work for CNA Insurance, and we have a healthcare program. That's one of the reasons why they hired me, and we're trying to clean that up. And one of the things that I noticed that was not only synonymous with Atrium when I was there, but also it's CNA, and that is statistically 40% of all the property-related claims for insurance or property damage, and this was true for Atrium as well as in the industry, were related to water damage in some form or fashion. And there's a lot of reasons why that occurs, and we're going to talk about some of those reasons and actually how to prepare for that. I'm might lobby to get to, since this is really geared toward healthcare engineers. Maybe I could lobby to get, present it another time so that we can get to that audience. And we'll definitely share this presentation on the NCHEA site. But it really talks about the crux of the matter and how to identify that and how to plan for that in the healthcare environment. Here's the legal disclaimer that my legal folks make me say. Fine line says that we have rights to your firstborn and all that stuff. The agenda today is water damage risk assessment. That's the first step that you really need to take, is to assess the risk of the facilities that you have and understand what those risks are. Pre-planning and emergency planning is important. We'll talk about that. And then some mitigation strategy. My favorite word. It all starts in a big circle, right? Everything is not static in healthcare. Y'all know that, right? It's always, there was a speaker here yesterday, it's a fluid, dynamic, daily, hourly, minute changing environment, right? And so likewise with any type of planning or emergency preparedness, you're going to start out with a plan, you're going to do a risk assessment, you're going to do a hazard analysis and a vulnerability assessment, and then you're going to plan for those through emergency operations. You'll have mitigation strategies, how you respond to that, and then you're going to redefine your goals based on how well those strategies worked and go back and recalibrate. And so that's important, and we'll talk about this to the end, is it's important on how well you circle that back around to recalibrate how you did and what you did was effective in preventing a loss. Are we always going to stop losses? Anybody out here think we can stop a loss ever? No, that's why you buy insurance, right? That's why CNA is in business and all the other insurance carriers. Losses will occur, but the degree in which they occur, the frequency in which they occur, and the outcome of that occurrence can be affected by these strategies in mitigation. These questions, and this is great in that I want y'all to answer out loud, is a hospital building and its contents highly susceptible to water damage? Yes, right? Will damaged areas interrupt or stop normal operations? Yes. Will damaged equipment be difficult to repair, restore, and replace? Yes. You need to share these three questions with your C-suite, because when you go to them with a desire and strategies for water damage mitigation, i.e. a roof, you've got a 30-year-old single-ply membrane roof that's well past its life cycle. These three questions right there should help convince them to give you the money to do that, or to buy equipment that's going to help mitigate the losses, right? There should be no discussion, because I think your C-suite needs to understand this, that these three questions are why you're doing what you're doing in your water damage mitigation strategies. Know your risk. We all know this, right? Interior, finished furnishings, and fixtures. What's our number one enemy with water in a healthcare environment? Mold, right? You've got, what, a 48-hour window max? Hopefully all of your plans out there have response to deal with mold and assess moisture content within 24 or 48 hours. That is our enemy number one in the healthcare environment, right? We can't afford to let that mold occur. Unheated building areas, canopies, vestibules, penthouses. An elevator penthouse might have a sprinkler at the top of it. Does it have a heat source, or is it a dry system, or is it an antifreeze system, right? Unheated sources throughout your facilities. I know you have them. Building equipment at or below street level. Do you have basements or sub-level areas? Has it been properly sealed? I know of several facilities that it was a tolerated intrusion rate of moisture, that they were below grade, they had sump pumps, the sump pumps were going to handle it, right? Up until the point in time when the sump pump went out, then it became a water damage mitigation issue. So you can't rely on that. You know, the fundamental cause of the problem was the seepage of the walls and not dealing with it properly to secure that, right? And the Band-Aid or the fix was a sump pump to say, okay, I can't stop the water. I don't have the money to stop the water. So I'm just going to put a Band-Aid on it with a sump pump. Proximity to roof level. I mentioned the penthouses at the roof. Commonly unheated spaces. But what happens when that sprinkler pipe that's supposed to be an antifreeze loop that hasn't been checked in 5 years to verify it's got enough antifreeze in it, and we get a polar vortex of 0 degrees in North Carolina, what happens when that pipe freezes? It breaks. When it thaws out, it flows water. And if it's on the 11th story of my building, where does that water go? Down that shaft, down all the way, if it's an elevator shaft, all the way down to the bottom of the elevator, damaging all the equipment as it goes. Anybody have to replace an elevator because of water damage? Anybody have a claim like that? It's an expensive venture. It's a high-limit claim when you have to go in and replace elevator control equipment, right? And building age. We all know we're struggling with aging infrastructure in hospitals. One of the things that I do when I look at hospitals, one of my jobs is to look at a hospital and do a facility risk assessment. What are the odds that they're going to have a loss? And the first thing I look at is how old is the structure? And I've looked at facilities that have structures 1949 and have never done any retrofits or upgrades with electrical or plumbing or sewer, right? What's the increased odds that they're going to have a major loss, right? So we have to know what the risks are associated with it. Here's some statistics. 41% burst pipe. Now, go back to my other one, right? 40% of all of my property-related claims are water damage, right? Now, of that 40%, this is the breakout of what's causing it, right? A burst pipe, a water pipe, a sewer pipe, any type of infrastructure, 41% of those. 24% sprinkler, right? And you say, ooh, well, we'll get rid of our sprinklers. We'll get rid of 24%. It's a sacrifice insurance companies will take. I know back when I was with Atrium, we had a different deductible with our insurance carrier. And that deductible, the insurance carrier was like, okay, we don't want to discourage you from getting sprinklers because of risk of water damage. But what we'll do is we'll alter the deductible when your water damage is caused by sprinklers, right? Because it's important to have sprinklers. And a sprinkler, if properly maintained, properly installed, properly designed with the proper heads and properly treated, will rarely inadvertently go off. It's activating because, one, it's activating the way it was designed to put out a fire, or two, it's activating or breaking because of a human element mistake. Statistically, sprinklers don't just pop and flow water. Somebody has busted it. We had housekeeping wanting to dust them, right, with a brush. If it's a frangible bulb and they get up in there with the Swiffer, that plastic thing to stick in between the bulb, they're going to break it, and the housekeeping person gets super wet. It's not hard to figure out who broke the sprinkler, right? Weather. Yeah, we have problems with weather. Polar vortexes cause problems. Buckling and cracking in concrete. Tornadoes, wind, downdrafts, ripping up your roofs. We'll talk about roofs in a minute. Drain overflows. Anybody here never have a toilet backup? Right? Drain overflows. The toilets are going to get backed up. We'll talk about that later. And 17% are just others, anything that they couldn't really categorize in one of these other events. So that's kind of the breakout of what we expect to have. Causes, delayed shutoff valve. We had a recent loss at a nursing home. It was a three-story nursing home. Not that old, maybe less than 10 years old. And it had a pipe freeze in the attic. It was a non-heated attic space. The building was sprinkler protected. That's another thing about the codes. NFPA 13R allows you to design a nursing home under residential occupancy standards for 13R. We don't encourage it. We don't like to see those because that lets you leave out sprinkler protection and combustible spaces like attics. This nursing home had a pipe freeze and busted the water. Now, the alarm went off. The fire department responded. You know, people were dashing around, grabbing patients and moving patients, all that stuff. When I'm reading the timeline of what went on with that event, the water ran for 4 hours. Why? Why does a water flow for 4 hours? You know water's flowing. No one knew how to turn it off. Not even the fire department. What kind of fire department is this? That they don't know where the control valves are, right? They didn't know what was flowing. They didn't know. They thought it was a domestic feed water. They probably went in and attempted to turn off the domestic feed, and they still had water flowing. So they did. I don't think they knew that it was sprinkler flow, although they did get a water flow alarm that called the fire department out there. So delay shutoff. We'll talk about that in the planning. You guys have to know where all your water sources are and where all the control valves are for those areas. Because here's a good example. We had it was a 12-story facility. It had a bed fire. True incident. The bed fire was started by a homeless person. The fire activated the two sprinklers that were in the patient suite. The sprinklers operated for 10 minutes. This was on the 11th floor, by the way, of this 12-story building. The 11th floor operated for 10 minutes. $1.2 million claim. Because all that water in 10 minutes went down to other floors. And you had construction and infrastructure issues, right? So delay and shutoff is key and critical to mitigating water damage, without a doubt. We'll talk about some options for that. Inadequate drainage. If you don't have drains, how many of y'all do dialysis? How many of y'all have portable dialysis machines? How many of y'all know that usually every night between 12 and 4 a.m. they hook that machine up and do a back flush cycle on it? And they leave it unattended. And a lot of times they'll put that machine and hook it up in a vacant patient room. You're dying for a water claim and a large water claim because we've had that happen, where the machine between 12 and 4 was running unattended and it was flowing water for many hours when that couple breaks off from that machine. You should go back to your facilities and say, dialysis machines should never be set up for flush cycles unless it's in a curbed and drained room, period, because you're asking for a large claim, because that machine is going to fail on you eventually. They have, because of the tubing that runs in them to their filters, it's Teflon tubing. And eventually that Teflon tubing slips out of its couples, its compression couples that hold it into the filter. And those Teflon tubes will slip out of those compression couples. So look for that. Improper design. Not designing a wet pipe sprinkler system in an unheated space. Or not providing adequate dry pipe or antifreeze protection. You have what you think is good insulation, but it gets damaged or displaced over the years, and what you think is a well-insulated space now becomes a walk-in cooler, and so you have wet pipe systems that freeze on you. And the most important one, it ceases to amaze me the stupidity involved with human beings. Human behavior, and anybody that's been through safety presentation knows that's one of the toughest things to control, right, is human behavior, human practices, either for lack of knowledge, intentional laziness, shortcuts, whatever, right? Human behavior are going to contribute to mistakes. Trying to clean and dust a sprinkler head can result in a $400,000 claim. Causes, we talked about design errors, improper installation, normal wear and tear. We know we have normal wear and tear. That's why we really emphasize one of our solutions is continuous facility condition assessments. You have to understand what your exposures are by doing facility condition assessments, because we know normal wear and tear is going to contribute. A roof has a life cycle. A air handler condensate drip pan has a life cycle. If you let it get beyond that life cycle, you're going to have water damage claims. And you know what I see a lot of? That rusted out, damaged, poorly maintained air handler drip condensate pan is right above your OR. Right? Now you take this back to the C-suite, right? If I don't stop the leak, 24, this is on average, some are even more, right? 24% of revenue from a healthcare system usually comes from the ORs, right? Now, you take that to the C-suite and say, if I lose the OR, we're losing this amount of money. And if I don't fix and prevent the water damage above my OR and reduce that potential, we're going to shut the OR down for so many days. So it all ties back to money. So you can pay me now a little bit to fix that issue and to fix that pan or to put in moisture sensors and detectors, right? Or we can just wait for the claim to happen. Modifications and additions. Somebody comes in and makes a change or a modification and they don't understand the ramifications down the road, right? And that can result in a water damage claim. Lack of preventive maintenance, budget restrictions, predictive replacement. I know that roof is 30 years old, but they just won't give me funding to replace it. Okay. If you don't have a capital management plan, if your facility doesn't have a capital management plan, this is what I tell all my underwriters. If a facility does not have a capital management plan, their insurance policy is their capital management plan. They know they've got a 30-year-old roof that's about to fail. They're waiting for that big thunderstorm to come and rip it open so they can file a claim and pay their deductible and replace the roof. That's reality. That's what I see a lot, especially a hospital that's struggling. If you take a small regional or a critical care hospital that's running on the red line or just barely over the black line, right, they don't have capital management funding. And so their insurance policy becomes their capital management plan. And they're waiting for a loss so that they can replace something. It's a run-to-fail mentality. But run-to-fail mentality is not a good mentality for you, because statistically, across the board, for every $1 that's recouped from an insurance claim, and I've been teaching this for 25 years, and it's still doing the same across the industry. For every $1, it's the old iceberg analogy, right? For every $1 you get reimbursed for an insurance claim, there's $4 of unreimbursed cost. Just the man hours for your maintenance people to do something special or come in on weekends or whatever, right? That inconvenience, that untraceable expense, it's a 1-to-4 ratio. So don't think that insurance is going to cover everything. Yeah, it might get you a new roof, but what about the damage it caused and the interruption to the business, all right? Assuming you have business interruption as well. Seasonal factors, freezing. It's becoming more prevalent, you know. Whether you want to call it global climate change or what, we do have dramatic changes, and we're seeing dramatic changes in storm activity. Flooding is more prevalent. You know, we used to talk about 100-year floodplains and 500-year floodplains and 1,000-year floodplains. We're seeing 1,000-year floodplain events. Hospitals that were in a 100-year floodplain are flooding now. You know, and so it's changing underwriting strategies, and it's changing policy terms and conditions, right? And it's also changing premiums on what people have to pay for flood insurance. Facility modifications, damage to domestic plumbing, along with sprinkler piping. We'll talk about project construction management. when I look back, some of the most egregious losses of water damage that we had were related to contractors gripping and ripping and not having a strategy of what to remove and how to abate it. And it's like, oh, we cut the wrong line. Or they put a cap on a line. This was a true claim, too. They put a four-inch, they were working on a line. They weren't done with the project, but they decided to put a cap on the line for when they went home and then turn the water back on. And overnight, that cap popped off. And so for a four-inch line was flooding water for a couple hours. Construction projects have to be properly managed through logistics meetings and pre-construction meetings and even during the construction process, because they're going to increase the risk for you having a water damage claim. And yeah, I can argue all day long that, okay, well, I'll subrogate against the contractor if he caused the damage. But that still doesn't necessarily change the fact that if that water damage interrupted your ability to serve your patients, patient care, right? If it interrupts your patient care, then yeah, you'll recover the claim and the contractor's going to fix it, but you've interrupted patient care for your facility. Okay. Healthcare specific, we talked about this, condensate pans. And they're usually above ORs, right? You need to go above your ORs and see if you what kind of process piping you have, what kind of moisture, water generating sources you have above your ORs, and I guarantee it's going to fail one of these days and you're going to be shutting down an OR if you don't have the proper controls. Chill water piping, dialysis departments, flush cycles, you got to pay attention to those. You're going to have claims. Ice machines. Everybody's got ice machines on their floors, right? What about the, all right, and I'll give you a credit. I got coffee makers and ice machines in a nurse station on each floor, and it's constantly attended. So a lot of times those can get caught quickly, right? What about the ice machines and coffee makers in your MOBs where they go home for the day and nobody's there? We've paid a lot of claims on medical office buildings for coffee makers and ice machines that have busted their Plex plastic lines overnight. So maybe, you know, we had a policy where we eliminated, you know, all that plastic piping and went to braided stainless steel pipes, right, for your coffee makers. And you know what? We also had all of our ice machines had catch drip pans underneath them with next to a sink that would drain into the, so if something inside the ice machine busted, and it drained, it would be caught by the drip pan and it would run into the sink. Small things, relatively small cost, but would save hundreds of thousands of dollars in claims because of water damage. Once it gets to the drywall, you're ripping drywall out. And mention drywall, y'all familiar with Dinsglass, right? You need to go back and change your construction facility specifications and start requiring Dinsglass. Dinsglass is a moisture resistant, it's not repellent, but it's moisture resistant and doesn't allow for the propagation of mold growth. It's a combination of a fiberglass type drywall material. Yes, it costs more in construction. But you know, when that stuff gets wet, you dry it out and you move on. You're not spending the construction cost to rip it out and replace it, you know, 2 feet off the floor. Dinsglass is great, and I don't have any investment in, disclaimer, in Dinsglass. Sprinklers inadvertently breaking, not being maintained or not trying to be clean. Concealed attic sprinklers, clogged sewage, use of wipes. We'll talk about that in a minute. Public restrooms, vandalism. One of our largest claims was somebody decided that it would be a nice prank to go in and turn the faucets on, put paper towels in the sink to clog up the drain and turn the faucets on and walk out, right? And nobody notices it until water's flooding out the under from the bathroom floor or door, right? Now, how do I stop that? How do you think I stop that from occurring? Oh, you were doing the wave hand, the motion, right? Motion's good, But motion can be circumvented. The question I would say is, does that motion have a time limit? So if I block the motion with a piece of paper or something, does it keep running? Or does you have to continually swipe to reset, right? Does it run for a fixed time? So motion sensors, press to hold it, automatically pop up, right? Those are good. But you don't want the ability for a faucet in a not constantly attended or a controlled environment area to be able to be run continuously unattended, right? Because someone will try to block up a sink and overflow the sink. Construction. We talked about that already. Roof leaders. No hub connections. This was one. It was a tall multi-story building, relatively new. It had a roof leader for the drain, eight inch roof leaders coming down for the roof drains. Super, super heavy flash flood. I forget, it was multiple inches per hour something comes in. So this roof leader came down, and in order to get away from an area, it came down, went over horizontally, and then went all the way down to the basement. Now, and that was about at the fourth floor is where it did that. So from the fourth to the 11th floor, that 8-inch pipe was filled with water, right? So that horizontal pipe at the bottom and that horizontal coupling at the bottom was seeing 0.433 PSI for every foot of elevation in pressure. No hub couplings in a situation like that, the water pressure just popped the couple off. And so all seven stories of 8-inch pipe filled with water from that rainstorm came down onto the fourth floor. Okay? And construction, so we went back, what went wrong, did an analysis, and we prevented no hub couplings for roof headers. Because if they're going to fill up with water, you want them to support it. And PTAC units. Anybody here deal with it or have PTAC units? Huh? Yeah? Behavioral health. Yeah, you see them a lot in nursing homes, right? The PTAC units are horrible. They're going to cause water problems. They're going to cause mold problems. They're usually down at the ground, and water comes in from underneath them when it floods out in the courtyard. I've never seen a good PTAC unit, I'm sorry, in a commercial environment. I could do a whole presentation on the negativity of PTACs. Roofs. We talked about roofs. A 1-inch deep pond weighs 5.2 pounds per square foot. If the roof is not designed for that load, ponding is going to cause the roof to fail. So it's important you look for ponding. If you're not draining, it's not sloping. Damaged insulation. You know, if the insulation was installed improperly and it's damaged or it's old and starts collapsing, then you get indentations where that insulation board was or should have been, and you start ponding. And ponding is weight load. And if the roof's not designed to support that weight load, you risk collapse of that roof. Proactively maintained roofs last an average of 21 years compared to the average lifespan of 13 years for reactive maintenance. This is an important one when you're trying to convince the C-suite to help you spend the money. And I'm going to change this slide, too, because I've got new figures. Annual maintenance cost is about 1% of the cost of the roof replacement. You could spend 10 cents per year per square foot on maintenance, or actually $20. It's gone up to about $20 per square foot or more for a roof replacement. Right? Roof costs are going sky high. That's statistically correct. Over an 80-year lifespan, a well-maintained roof will likely be replaced 3 times. A poorly maintained roof will be replaced 5 times. And increased cost of 40% over that life cycle. So it pays for itself. Roof maintenance is not a joke. Roof maintenance, or the lack thereof, is a leading cause, one of our leading factors of roof problems and leaks and water damage in our facilities and damage to equipment, because water comes down, it goes in, and it goes to the path of least resistance. If you see a roof like this, This is not made up, folks. This is a real photograph. This was not staged or pretended or Hollywood. This is vegetation on the roof. We cringe when we see photos like this because that tells me one thing. That location does not manage their roof. They've probably not been up on that roof in years. It's not a good sight to see vegetation or rot or mold or ponding. Here's a good example of indented insulation board. And so now that the roof is ponding. If you go up on a roof and see ponding, you need to call a roof consultant or contractor to find out why and provide quotes and estimates to fix it. You should not let it continue to pond. Roofs collapse because of ponding. Surface water runoff. We're seeing more and more. I mentioned 100-year flood is no more. That's statistically blown out of the water. What was 500-year floodplain is now the 100-year. What was that? Orange is the new black, right? The 500 is the new 100 comparison. We're seeing more and more surface water runoff and flooding exposures than we ever have before. One foot of water in a one-story building causes 27% of the total cost to replace it. One foot of water in a one-story building equates to damage of about 27% of the cost of that building. 2 feet, 52%. It's exponential, right? The deeper the water, the greater the cost. Structural damage, we don't even think about that. What type of, when I start having flooding events, we need to start having structural engineers. Because once that water gets below or behind structural members, especially concrete, and I start degrading the foundation, I could have structural problems with that building that could exponentially cost the increase in damage. So don't forget about that. Water may enter your building from storm water, water runoff or known flood exposures such as rivers or streams. We know from FEMA maps. FEMA gives us flood maps and tells us where our flood zones are. It gives us a 1% chance of flooding, which is, quote unquote, the 100-year. It gives us a 0.1% is 100-year, and 0.2% is the 500-year flood, right? And so I can go on the flood map and look up your address or your facility and tell whether or not you're near or in a flood zone, right? And then your flood insurance would be based on that flood rate, right? So we know that rivers and streams give us a known hazard. I wouldn't say all, but most of our American cities, especially with the highest populations, where our largest hospitals are, were built next to rivers. Because we need, as humans, we need water supply, right? We always congregated to rivers. They not only did they give us water, but they also served as means of passage and shipment and transportation, right? So our large cities have rivers by them. And our hospitals were always built on donated land, right? By a charitable organization near those rivers. And so a lot of hospitals we see are in floodplains, are in flood zones. And the question is, how do they deal it? Herman Memorial, believe it or not, in Houston, all of New Orleans and just about all of Houston is in a flood zone, right? Herman Memorial is in a flood zone. Their entire basement, where their main electrical switchgear and equipment is in a floodplain. And they had a huge loss. I forget which hurricane it was, but they had a huge loss. It shut down the hospital forever. And that's a large hospital in downtown Houston. They have now installed what look like their vaulted submarine-type doors that when a flood event is about to occur, they go down and they seal the doors to that basement. So there could be flooding, 3 feet all around that hospital, and their electrical vaults will not flood with water. They've hermetically sealed their electrical rooms. That's what they had to do. That was their solution. They couldn't rebuild. You can't rebuild a new electrical room. Charleston, the hospital down in Roper, after Hugo, they moved all of their electrical, their generators, their switchgear, and all that stuff. They moved it up to a second level to get above the 12-foot flood elevation that's expected from tidal surge in Charleston. So they had to relocate. They did relocate all of their electrical up high. So we know that occurs. But we also have surface water runoff, and that's the one that we miss the most. Had an emergency room that had a sloping entrance driveway coming down to it. And a real heavy rainstorm comes, and it's like a river coming down that driveway right into their front door. And they filled up the nursing or the emergency room, shut down the emergency room for a week because the emergency room had 2 feet of water in it. Just not because of a river or a body of water, just surface water runoff. They didn't have any curbing, they didn't have any drains, they didn't have any barriers to divert that water from coming straight down from the street during that flash flood. Awareness, know where your water is flowing. Put a poncho on a heavy rainstorm, put a poncho on and go walk your facilities and pay attention to the water flow. Pay attention to your drains, maintaining your drains. Here's another big loss, right? We had a hospital system that had a courtyard, pretty good-sized courtyard. It had 2 drains to drain that water out of the courtyard. They were not maintained. They filled up with leaves. A heavy rain came. This was in Texas. It was like a 6 inches per hour type storm. It turned the courtyard into a swimming pool. And all that water was seeping into all 4 sides of the courtyard into the hospital on those exterior walls. Drain management is important. You have to know where they are. You have to know that you're going and cleaning them out. Seasonal review. You know, when it's fall, you got leaves. When leaves come down, they're blocking drains, right? When it's winter and it's snowing, you get ice, frozen drains. And then when that ice starts melting, there's nowhere for the water to go. Summer construction, a construction project. We've had losses where a construction project comes in and moves the topsoil, creates a berm or whatever, and diverts the main path of water to now it goes right into the hospital, right? It happens. We've got loss history on it, right? We learn from experience. We learn from losses. Separation of materials from the floor surface. That's what's happening when we get flooded. You got to have drain inspections, drainage areas, diversion, barrier walls, so you can divert that water. And you got to have a flood response and mitigation program. Do you have a response team? Do you have 55-gallon drums or kits that have, you know, moisture-repellent snakes or sandbags, whatever it takes, right, to stop and divert that water and start cleanup as soon as possible. Wet dry vacs so that you can start sucking up the water. Do you have contracts in place with remediation teams to come out on short notice for emergency response to start dealing with that? Remember, molds are our enemy. You've got 24 to 48 hours to deal with that moisture. Pre-planning, mitigation, emergency response considerations. Some of these we've kind of already talked about in the course of this presentation. Facility condition assessments. How many of y'all think about it in your mind? You don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you actually have budgeted money to hire a third-party company to come out and do a facility condition assessment from roof to basement and to look at all aspects of the facility, including utilities, right? That's what should be done every 5 years. You should be doing facility condition assessments every 5 years. And you know what? The result of that facility condition assessment is fodder for you to go to your capital management planning committee or your C-suite and say, this air handler is beyond its useful life. It had a useful life of 20 years. We've managed to get 45 years out of it. We have to deal with it. Yeah, we have to, because it's going to fail on me. And it could cause, when it does fail, I'm going to have an OR full of water, right? So you have to have facility condition assessments. That's your one takeaway from this. Every time I teach a seminar, they always say that you guys are going to walk away with just 20% of what I said this morning. And that's okay. But I want to help you out, and I want to tell you what that 20% is. And one of that 20% is you should look at doing facility condition assessments. Source identification. Know exactly where all of your water is. How does it come into the building? How is it distributed? How can I turn it off? How can I isolate it? How can I detect it when it's leaking? Right? I got to know where my source identification. Hazard vulnerability assessment. If I have a sewer drain that's running over the top of my MRI, I need to do something. Otherwise, when that sewer drain fails, and it's going to fail, sewer drains always fail, especially if they're old cast iron, that 1949 healthcare section that has a cast iron sewer system that's dated and aged, it's just a matter of time before the wind blows the building a certain direction and that cast iron pipe cracks. And if you're dropping sewer on top of dark water on top of an MRI, you're buying a new MRI. Or your insurance company is buying you an MRI. Incorporate flow control monitoring. We'll show you some of these in a minute. There are a slew of devices out there. And actually, CNA, I'm on a pilot process. It's called IoT, Internet of Things. And I'm working on a pilot process now where we're going to start giving these devices to select insureds. And it's a cell phone, a cellular-based technology. It's a white box about this big square, is what they call the gateway. I put the battery in it, and I hold the button for a few seconds. It automatically connects with cell phones. It's a high-power, low-power, high-strength signal that goes through concrete, so I could put one gateway at the top of my 11-story building, and I would get sensor detection in my basement. Up to 5 miles, that gateway will sense a sensor, right? So the sensor, I pull the battery tab that comes with it. I turn the sensor upside down for 5 seconds. I tilt it back up. When the green light comes on, it means it's talking to the gateway. I peel the sticker off of the back of the sensor, which is a command strip, and I stick it in my pan under my water heater or my, bathroom floor, wherever I want to detect moisture. And it starts communicating through the gateway and will send alarms to a 24-hour central station monitoring company, and it will also send texts and emails to whoever you want it to when it senses moisture. You guys got to take advantage of the technology that's out there. This is so simple. It's quick, it's easy, it's low cost, and it gives you immediate notification when there's an adverse condition like water. It's invaluable, right? And so there's a lot of technology out there that you need to look at and consider. Prompt notification of key personnel. Who's on that call tree? Who's supposed to respond? Who do I call, right? I call my water busters cleanup team, right? I'm going to call my quick response contract vendor that's going to come in and help remediate. I'm going to call my response technicians who know where valves are located, who know where my water cleanup equipment is, right? I need to make sure I've got a process flow on who to contact and who to get implemented into action as soon as possible. Training, you got to run through it. Anytime I come up with a program or a policy or a procedure, you have to train it so that people understand it. You can't call Billy Bob up at 3 a.m. and say, hey, Billy Bob, you were on that team. to respond to water damage. Get your clothes on. Come down. He said, "What? What? I don't know. I'm in Texas. You know, I'm on vacation." So you got to have the plan. You got to train for it, and you got to know when people who are on the team aren't going to be around to respond. Maps and drawings. You got to have maps and drawings of all your utilities, where they're coming in, how they're fed, how to isolate them. And people have to know this. Hopefully you got somebody on site. There's a trend for our smaller regional hospitals to have maintenance on a response cycle, like from 11 p.m. until 7 a.m., there's no maintenance in the facility. They're on call, okay? And so when I'm looking at a lot of the hospitals, we don't like to insure hospitals like that. Because you know what the average time for an on-call person is? What do you think the average time is? Hour? Yeah, you're right. The true time is 45 minutes. 45 minutes, water could be flowing till that knowledgeable person that knows how to shut it off can get there. You're toast. Whatever's getting hit with water is toast. You can't wait 45 minutes. You need 10 minutes. An 11-story building flowing water in two sprinklers, about 25 gallons per minute each, was a $1.2 million claim. Not to mention it shut down the whole 11th floor, loss of business interruption, loss of patient care, interruption to staff. You know, it was huge, right? You can't afford 45 minutes for a response. You just can't. So somebody needs to be on site and know how to do this. PM for water handling equipment, sump pumps, vacuums. Remember that sump pump? We had a big claim for that. The sump pump went out. You know, if that sump pump, what's a solution for a sump pump? What's a solution for when a sump pump goes out? What's an easy fix? What do you think? It's a switch, a water level switch in the sump, right? And when that water level reaches a certain point, it's turning on a switch and sending an alarm. And somebody says, "Oh, I got an alarm for the sump pump. I need to go look and check it out," right? If you're using a sump pump as a Band-Aid to stop water mitigation from a continuing flowing source, then you need to make sure, by all means, that sump pump is working and not getting clogged up or not failing. They're usually not PM'd. Predictive maintenance. Make sure that your water handling equipment is being properly PM'd and maintained. Backup power to critical equipment. That's another one. One of the things that water causes the most damage to is electrical. Now you're going to start losing power, too. Y'all were here several years ago. I did a presentation on the Haywood fire with the electrical switchgear fire that shut down that hospital up in Haywood for 59 and a half days. That was water damage to the switchgear because of a green roof above it. The architect thought it'd be nice and pretty to have grass growing on top of the electrical switchgear room, right? Until it leaks. Plumbing failure insights. 1-inch diameter supply flows almost 4 times more water than a half inch. It's an exponential increase as you increase in the size of the pipe. A broken 2-inch supply line flows over 125 gallons per minute at 55 psi. This amounts to about 2,500 gallons in 20 minutes. In a high-rise structure, it's always going to happen on the upper floors. I guarantee you. And water comes downhill. Know where all of your water, your fire protection, your domestic water, your hot water, your chill water loops, any type of water supply in your system, you need to know how it comes in, how it's supplied, how it's distributed, and how to shut it off. And don't forget about exercising. I know that my previous life, we had some older facilities, older locations, and we knew it, we discovered it. I don't know if it's ever been repaired or not, but there were valves where the facility guy said, "Yeah, they're too old and they're froze open, and I can't close them." I said, "What happens when you need to close them?" "Well, we can't. We'd have to turn off the water to the whole hospital." bad answer, right? Invest in that money. In order for a valve to work and keep it from being froze open, you have to exercise them. You got to be able to cut that water off at that source so you're not cutting off the water to the whole facility and interrupting the whole facility. Pre-planning, establish a reporting system, investigation protocols, track the water damage. This is important to me, and this is what we implemented in my previous employer, was a tracking system. So it didn't matter where, who caused it, or whatever, there was what was called, facilities management had what they call an event reporting system. And that event reporting system was a tracking of things that went wrong. You know, ice machine busted, you know, caused damage. Okay, it may be insignificant, but if I start seeing trending, if I start looking and managing that data of all those events, ice machines breaking, that tells me that I've got an inherent problem with ice machines that I need to start looking into. Hey, instead of this plex piping, maybe we go with corded braidless stainless steel piping. Then we're going to reduce the likelihood of that stuff failing, right? So you have to track your events. Your data, your history is important in moving forward. It's that circle, right? You have to recalibrate what you're doing because you know what? You're always going to find something new that I didn't think of before in that loss event. Time? Oh, I'm good. That's good. So, pre-planning. This is important too. Establish agreement with contract environmental services companies. Most of you already have that. The question is, do they also have capability to do water remediation? And that's what you want to have. You want to make sure you're contracting with a water remediation company. Establish guidelines for minimum flood mitigation equipment and inventories. What do you want to have on site and keep on site ready for dealing with flood water? Update minimum construction facility standards, like I was telling you earlier, right? We changed our spec and our standard on ice machine and coffee maker feeds. We changed our spec on ice machine catch pans that drain to a sink. We changed to Dens glass drywall. Even though it was costly in initial construction, it was worth it because if there was a water event, I'm not ripping it out. I'm just drying it up and moving on, right? So look at your facility standards. Review your preventive maintenance procedures. Perform facility condition assessments and implement flow restriction and monitoring devices. For cold weather, don't forget, we're almost out of our cold weather spell, but don't forget about next year. Building envelope and insulation. Check out your dry pipe systems, your antifreeze loops. Make sure your sprinkler contractor are draining your low point condensate drains. Make sure you're paying attention to their service so that your sprinkler systems aren't going to freeze in cold weather. Make sure your mechanical systems are working good. We've had several claims where a louver, an outside louver, was stuck open and the wind was blowing from that side and the cold air was blowing through the louver onto a sprinkler head, froze the sprinkler head, all because the louver was stuck open, letting cold air on the windward side of that building come in. Supplement and your standby equipment, making sure that it's okay and it's in place. You got to watch out for temporary modifications and construction of your building. You know, if they cut open a wall, you know, are they preventing air and cold air from coming into your facility? And adequate maintenance. Facility condition assessments. I said that, five times already now, right? Facility condition assessments. Flow control and sensing devices. One line drawings and diagrams so you know where your valves are. This is an example of a flow control device, the one on the top. Basically, it monitors flow rates. So if it's programmed to monitor the normal flow rate of 100 gallons per minute in a building, and then all of a sudden a pipe breaks and it's flowing 1,000 gallons per minute, it will automatically detect that increased flow and it will shut off the main control valve to stop the water in the building. Awesome, awesome technology. Moisture sensing, we talked about this. This is one where you you plug it in, and it's got a remote sensor that goes to it, and it detects moisture on the floor, and it will go back to the valve, and it will shut the water off automatically. Not just tell you that a water is happening, but it will actually stop the water flow for that. Toilet Trap-X's. Anybody here use Trap-X? Yeah. I can't say enough about Trap-X. They're going to stop the towels. They're going to prevent the towels from clogging up your drains. And then the last one, I don't own stock in this company, but I do advocate its use. It's called the Shutgun. And the Shutgun is a sprinkler device. We put these at Atrium in all the mechanical spaces with a poncho and goggles. And you could put this in the sprinkler head and in three clicks, stop water flow to the sprinkler head. Fire departments don't like you shutting off under no circumstances water supply to sprinklers in a fire event, right? They're going to prohibit you from turning off your water supplies or putting wood wedges in the sprinkler and all that stuff to stop the sprinkler flow. But fire departments will accept this device because it has a fusible link on it. So when I clamp this thing up into that sprinkler head, if the fire was to rekindle, it would pop this link. Got to make sure I don't get my finger in there because it hurts. And it pops it out, and the water starts flowing again. So fire departments love this too. If somebody knocks off a sprinkler head and starts water flow, you can stop it real quick until it's, you know, shut down. The fire department, no problem with it. Even after a fire event, if the fire is controlled and you know it, you can put this in there. Fire departments will accept it because it's got a fusible link and it will pop itself out if the fire rekindles. So I think that's about it. Procedures is the takeaway. That's it.
Thanks, Brett. Everybody give Brett a hand.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
So guys, when I say something about Caremont, what happened is just maybe you don't have to go through the same crap I go through. So in the words of my COO, water always wins. I hadn't had a water event for a year till December 31st, 2019. Since then, seventh floor sprinkler, we talked about that yesterday. My guys had that water shut off in 10 minutes, no damage control. That Dallas machine, Brett, you're talking about, you know where the clinicians halfway run that tie-gon tubing to a sink, and they use this tape to tape it on there. Well, they don't work half the time. So it falls out, and then it floods, and not too much. This is the one that got me, though. We had a plugged-off water line in the wall. The plug popped out of it from some project, you know, 20 years ago where it's been capped off. And the valve was in a patient room. And we have a policy. We can't go into the ceiling of a patient room with a patient in there. And this is off shift, so it's a skeleton crew of everything. That water ran for 20 minutes while they were trying to find a place to put this patient so my guys could get in there to turn that water off. That was a it was over imaging, $600,000 later, and 6 weeks later for a machine to get new parts for and things like that. So water always wins. Be back at 9:45. We'll close this thing out. Thank you.